One of you survived. In today's world, one person dies every minute from a snake attack. Traffic accidents are more than twice as deadly, and pollution is seven times deadlier still. But it's not just the dangers of our time that have threatened your existence. 40 years ago or more, you needed your parents to survive a world that had nearly double the US murder rate, and over five times the amount of nuclear warheads than are estimated to remain today. If they had died before having children, or your grand and great-grandparents who survived the 100 million deaths of World War II and the Spanish flu, then you would never have existed. And that is not the end. For you have been surviving for much longer. From the Black Death, which killed between 30 and 50% of Europe, to China's Three Kingdoms Wars that may have killed up to 10% of the entire world, our history is full of massive loss of life. Anatomically modern humans survived thousands of generations of being shot, stabbed, eaten, drowned, starved, or worse, in order to pass on the lineage that would eventually create you. And of course, your ancestry has been surviving for much longer than that. Humankind may be hundreds of thousands of years old, but your genetic lineage stretches further still, back through hominin, ape, and primate ancestors, who each had to survive in order for you to live today. From unforgiving ice ages, to monstrous extinct predators, to surviving the dangers of an ever-changing, sometimes explosive planet, the story of human evolution is, at its heart, a story of fierce survival in the face of many dangers. But what exactly did our most ancient ancestors endure so that we could exist? And when, during this million-generation journey, did we come the closest to not surviving at all? When was the most dangerous time to be alive? Are snakes the most dangerous animal on the planet? Not quite, but close. They come in third on the list behind humanity's two greatest killers, mosquitoes and ourselves. Gone are the Statue of Liberty and Empire State Building, frozen and crushed beneath a strange, featureless tundra. Entire cities have been swallowed under the ice. Glaciers 3 miles thick cover much of North America and Europe. As these ice sheets formed, they have locked water away from the oceans, revealing new land bridges. North America has become reacquainted with Russia via the Bering Strait. Further south, desert sands have given way to grasslands as cooling temperatures and shifting rain patterns revitalize the landscapes. Meanwhile, tropical rainforests like the Amazon have withered, replaced by sparse, scrubby vegetation able to withstand this alien earth. Humans in northern regions start to migrate south, where the land is still habitable. Resources, however, are scarce, and in some places newcomers are accepted, but in other places they are not. Wars over the remaining fertile land erupt, with the victors clustering around the equator, clinging to the last remnants of livable earth in a frozen, unforgiving world. This desolate, frozen Earth sounds like the work of science fiction, but these environmental effects would occur if today's global temperature dropped by only 5 or 6 degrees Celsius. And 34 million years ago, during the Eocene-Oligocene transition, the Earth's temperature dropped by just that amount, irrevocably altering the landscape and almost ending the human journey before it had begun. And so, was this the most dangerous time to be alive? For our ancestors. These dramatic climatic changes were so deadly in part because they happened within a geologically brief span of about 400,000 years. Other periods of climate change have generally happened much more slowly, but during this period, the Earth transitioned from a much hotter greenhouse world with no permanent ice to one with extensive Antarctic ice sheets. This rapid change was likely triggered by the opening of the Drake Passage, the body of water between South America's Cape Horn, Chile, Argentina, and the South Shetland Islands of Antarctica. It's a wild and stormy patch of water that has claimed many ships over the years. In the distant past, when the Drake Passage opened, it allowed cold water to start circulating around Antarctica, creating a powerful ocean current called the Antarctic Circumpolar Current. This current acted like a barrier, cutting Antarctica off from warmer waters and trapping cold air and water around the continent. With less heat reaching Antarctica, it became much colder, and ice sheets started to form and grow. This local event kickstarted changes in climate experienced across the globe, changes that would be felt by our most distant ancestors, who unknowingly lived out their lives in the lush and verdant tropical forests of Egypt. Imagine an ancient forest of towering fig trees and sprawling canopies. The morning light filters through the leaves as a small group of creatures swing and leap among the branches. They are small, agile, primarily tree-dwelling, and are the forerunners of modern apes and monkeys. Many millions of years later, a modern man would stand where this forest once grew and, for the first time, give a name to this creature, Egyptopithecus. The forest would be long gone, now turned arid desert. Indeed, Egyptopithecus fossils were unearthed in the Fayum Depression in Egypt. Here, Elwin L. Simons, renowned archaeologist and paleontologist, dug into the ground in search of some of our longest lost ancestors. From the bones he carefully extracted and meticulously studied, Simons learned that Egyptopithecus was about the size of a modern-day house cat, and exhibited traits that would be carried forward by their descendants. In particular, a small but vital aspect of their cranial physiology that changed our understanding of the evolutionary trajectory from ancient primates to modern species, like humans and the other great apes. The ethmoid and frontal sinuses are tiny, mucus-lined, air-filled spaces in the skull next to the nose. These sinuses, once thought to be exclusive to modern African apes and humans, are present in Egyptopithecus, suggesting that they are not unique to later hominoids. And this small but mighty discovery secured Egyptopithecus's place in human evolutionary history, showing us that anatomical features that would later define modern apes and humans appeared much earlier than we previously thought. Egyptopithecus thus became a cornerstone species in the evolutionary story, linking ancient primates with their modern descendants. And their lush forest homes would have provided everything they needed, food and shelter and protection from ground-dwelling predators. But the continent on which they lived was changing. Foraging would have become harder, berries and nuts not as abundant. For unbeknownst to them, the Eocene-Oligocene transition was underway, a transformation in climate and environment that would nearly wipe them, and therefore us, from history. The changes would have manifested in subtle shifts in climate year by year that eventually would see vegetation failing to thrive, blooming for shorter periods or even dying, now that it was less suited to the climate. Fruits that once ripened in abundance would have grown scarce, and competition among species would have grown fiercer. The forests shrunk. The seas, too, cooled, altering marine ecosystems. Indeed, from the fossils excavated during this period, we can get a sense of the shockwaves delivered by these global changes. And some of the most revealing evidence is found through teeth. Dental records from the early primates of this period reveal a stark reduction in tooth diversity across species, which highlights two grim realities. Firstly, there was likely a narrowing of dietary options as many plant species died off. This meant that, where once there were primates with teeth adapted for a specific group of fruits, leaves, and seeds, The fossil record shows that only those primate ancestors able to engage in a more generalized diet, and therefore able to make the most of the remaining plants, persevered. Secondly, the lack of diversity at the end of this period tells us something sinister. A smaller range of skeletons, suggesting a smaller range of creatures. In short, animals were dying at an alarming rate. An estimated 63% of all Afro-Arabian mammalian species were driven to extinction during the Eocene-Oligocene transition. And this transition was the cause of the Grande Coupure, or Great Break in English, a major extinction and faunal turnover event. The rewriting of entire geographies meant many native Europeans, and some, though fewer, Asian mammals, including some early primates, carnivores, and the horse-like paleotheres, were wiped from existence. Gone were adapiforms, lemur-like primates, and so too ommomyoforms, tarsia-like primates. These species had thrived in tropical forests, likely relying on dense canopies for food and shelter. But as the climate cooled and tropical forests shrank, they faced massive habitat loss and an inability to adapt to the newly formed open woodlands and grasslands. Their disappearance from the fossil record at this time marks their loss. The Great Break demonstrates how changing climate can drive extinction, migration, and adaptation, profoundly influencing the course of evolution. The Eocene-Oligocene transition, then, was a bottleneck. Those animals unable to adapt to a cooler climate and the new geography it created were squeezed out. The rest funneled through a tight population corridor, where variation contracted and only the generalists could survive. This means that the early primates that survived this period were not necessarily the strongest, but they were likely the most adaptable. Species that could shift their diets, explore new territories, or endure greater competition passed on their genes, shaping the evolutionary trajectory of their descendants, including our own human lineage. And so, returning back to the Fayum Depression in Egypt, we see in the fossil record the gradual emergence of traits that would define later primates. An ability to regulate temperature via their sinuses, more versatile teeth, and larger brains. These adaptations were not random, but responses to the intense selective pressures of a rapidly changing world. However, at the end of the Oligocene, as temperatures began to stabilize, ecosystems regained some diversity. The descendants of the survivors began to thrive in their new habitats, with more abundance and less competition. Indeed, fossil evidence shows a resurgence of species diversity, including in primates that would eventually give rise to the first true monkeys and apes. But despite this, the Eocene-Oligocene transition proved to be a dangerous time to be alive. A tightrope in evolution's precarious path, the changing climate threatening the life it had once molded. The cooling of the Eocene-Oligocene transition was a crucible that tested life's mettle, leaving behind only those able to endure and adapt. And though our very distant ancestors may have made it through this environmental crisis long enough to pass on useful traits to their descendants, Egyptopithecus eventually disappears from the fossil record around 29 million years ago. Ultimately, even they could not keep up with the changing geography of their world. We don't currently have a direct lineage connecting Egyptopithecus to Proconsul, known as the first ape that emerged around 23 million years ago, but it is thought that they are connected, with Proconsul often cited as a descendant of Egyptopithecus or a closely related group. But would these more recent ancestors, adapted as they were to this less tropical world, be any safer than Egyptopithecus? Indeed, our planet is never truly static. Its changes are never-ending, from ceaseless climate transformation to the ever-shifting placement of oceans to the ground itself moving beneath our feet. And some change would come not as a cooling in the air, but as a sudden and violent bubbling of heat from below. It came about this year that a most dread portent took place, for the sun gave forth its light without brightness, like the moon, during this whole year. It is 536 AD, 6 years before the Justinian Plague hits Constantinople, and the world is about to go dark. Exactly where the eruption took place, we don't know for sure. Likely the Northern Hemisphere, possibly Iceland. But what we do know is that the eruption of a great volcano somewhere was powerful enough to spew forth a column of ash and smoke so thick it reached the clouds. The ash spread swiftly, carried by winds across the world. Across entire continents, the sun appeared to shrink, its light turning pale and cold. Crops withered, rivers froze. People around the world prayed to gods and spirits for deliverance. Days blurred into nights under a perpetually grim, grey sky, and an unnatural winter settled upon much of the earth. To many, it must have felt as if the end of days had come. But humans have long been threatened by ecological disaster. The 536 eruption is just one example of how volcanic activity has transformed the modern world, but we can also travel back some 20 million years, 10 million years after the Eocene-Oligocene transition, to the African continent for an even more extreme example. For here we can find Proconsul, strong candidate for the first ape, and our distant ancestor. His ancestors may have survived extreme climate change, but was the reward to move from the frying pan into the fire to exist in an even more dangerous period? Proconsul's limbs are suited for both climbing and walking on all fours, though life is still spent mostly in the trees, which provide food and shelter. The more settled climate means that the forest, less dense than that of 10 million years before but still fruitful, provides a good abundance of food, though predators on the ground remain a challenge, for giant reptiles linger by watering holes, and large carnivores stalk the forest floors and grasslands beyond. And so as we travel back 20 million years to the cusp of the Miocene, we can probably see why a proconsul male has made the decision to stay in the branches on this fateful day. But as he busily forages, his concentration is suddenly broken. A strange sound, unlike any he has heard before, bursts into the air. A low, sustained rumble echoes over the tree canopy, but it's not thunder or a falling tree. The earth trembles beneath him, and then he sees it, a dark column rising on the horizon, climbing higher and higher into the sky. A nearby volcano is erupting, sending ash and smoke billowing into the atmosphere, and it's about to make life very difficult for our ancestors. Imagine, if you can, a trough or depression 3,300 feet above sea level and 20 miles broad, the mountains rising with very great abruptness on both sides to a height of 9,000 feet. So wrote Joseph Thomson, a British geologist who was one of the very first Western explorers to study the Great Rift Valley. The Great Rift Valley in East Africa encompasses a huge range of terrains and ecosystems, and though Western explorers only started studying and documenting the region in the 19th century, it was home to a rich tapestry of cultures long before, including the Maasai in East Africa and the Datuga people of Tanzania. It appears, as Thomson wrote, as a vast trench bordered by steep, rugged escarpments that rise sharply from the valley floor. The valley itself is dotted with lakes, active volcanoes, and fertile plains. It is the site of volcanic cones and geysers, evidence of the ongoing tectonic activity that created its iconic features over millions of years. And our ancestor, Proconsul, was there in the midst of its creation. What is now a lush and varied area of Africa was, in Proconsul's time, a place of massive geological upheaval. The Great Rift Valley would emerge as a massive tear in the Earth's crust caused by tectonic forces pulling the African plates apart. And this would ultimately give rise to towering volcanoes, deep valleys, and expansive lakes that still define the landscape today. Over millions of years, volcanic activity sculpted East Africa, and for the inhabitants of the region, this had the potential in the long term to be good news. Explosive eruptions depositing nutrient-rich ash across the land, rejuvenating soils and fostering biodiversity. In time, these fertile grounds nurturing a huge array of flora and fauna, eventually shaping the diets of grazing mammals upon which our ancestors would one day prey. But in the short term, this volatile environment had the potential to be very, very bad. And for those, like Proconsul, caught in the tumult of volcanic activity, this was certainly a dangerous time to be alive. The Great Rift Valley is made up of various different types of volcano, such as caldera volcanoes that collapse in on themselves, shield volcanoes formed by slow-moving lava, and stratovolcanoes with their typically explosive eruptions. Indeed, when a stratovolcano erupts, the landscape is thrown into chaos. It sends up a massive ash column that can soar tens of kilometers into the atmosphere, raining volcanic particles down on the surrounding ecosystem. A pyroclastic flow usually follows, a deadly avalanche of superheated gas and debris, scorching the earth and killing anything in its path. And we don't have to imagine such an event. We have seen stratovolcanoes erupt with great devastation in modern times. The eruption of Mount St. Helens on the 18th of May 1980 was one of the most devastating volcanic events in modern history. The eruption had followed 2 months of increasing seismic activity and steam venting. It all began with a massive landslide, which destabilized the volcano's north side. This then triggered a huge blast from the volcano that flattened an area of 600 square kilometers. In seconds, whole forests were uprooted. An ash and debris column rose 24 kilometers into the atmosphere, and perhaps most horrifying to those watching was the pyroclastic flow, a cloud of dust and gas and rock traveling at speeds of up to 80 miles an hour and reaching temperatures of 350 degrees Celsius. 57 people lost their lives, and thousands of animals perished in the superheated cloud. And the aftermath was just as dire. The ash plume deposited 540 million tons of ash across 11 states, causing respiratory illnesses and smothered ecosystems. Luckily though, our modern medicine and technology allowed affected regions to recover, to an extent, from the effects of Mount St. Helens. But 20 million years ago, Proconsul would have had no such help. And so as our distant ancestor watched this strange darkness stretch across the sky from his branch, he might have noticed an odd rain. Soft grey flakes beginning to drift down from the expanding cloud, light at first, but soon heavy and suffocating. It would have collected on the leaves, turning the lush green canopy into a ghostly grey landscape, the floor into a carpet of dust. Fruits would be buried, their skins choked with toxic particulates. The air itself would have grown dense and acrid, uncomfortable to breathe. In the days immediately after the eruption, life in his forest grinds to a halt. The thick grey blanket coats everything, making food inedible or scarce and contaminating water sources. Indeed, we know from studying animals buried in ash at sites such as Ash Fall in Nebraska, that breathing in ash fall, which is made up of tiny, sharp pieces of rock and glass, can be deadly. Any animals that did so would have experienced pain, extreme breathlessness, and suffocation. In Nebraska, scientists found many perfectly preserved bones of animals who had died breathing in the ash, each layer revealing the timeline of death. First, smaller animals, then mid-sized, and finally, the larger beasts that may have struggled on in the choking atmosphere just a little longer. Luckily for our proconsul, he is far enough away to avoid this terrible fate, but the immediate challenge is clear. His once abundant home has been turned into an inhospitable, barren wasteland in a matter of hours. And proconsul fossils have been preserved in volcanic deposits that bear witness to the region's fiery past, Scientists who discovered these fossils referred to these findings as death assemblages. Whole populations wiped out simultaneously by eruptions. But this is not the end. For if this proconsul male and his troop can adapt, find new shelter, forage what remains of the plant life, and make it through the months and potentially years it takes for the environment to return to something more sustainable, he has a chance to survive. For over time, wind and rain will gradually redistribute the ash, exposing patches of soil and creating more stable landforms such as ridges or plains. Erosion plays a key role in shaping the landscape and allowing new plants to take root in areas where the ash has thinned. And as vegetation regrows, it stabilizes the soil and attracts wildlife back to the area. The pace of recovery depending on factors like ash thickness, climate, and the resilience of local species. And so, despite the devastation wrought in the short term, after an eruption, the land can sometimes become even more fruitful than ever before. Indeed, ultimately, the Great Rift Valley and its tectonic changes would eventually transform the region into a complex and diverse climatic zone, profoundly impacting both its natural environment and the course of human evolution. For Proconsul, this means that although this has been an incredibly dangerous time to exist, having survived the immediate horrors of an eruption, the changes brought to the wider region would provide many opportunities to his immediate descendants. For though Proconsul might prefer the dense canopies of forests, by surviving the dangers and shifts of this volcanic region, its descendants could benefit from the shifting landscape, which would become the site of evolution of more advanced primates. But, as before, with expansion and new opportunity comes new risk, for there will be new threats to face, threats with large teeth, sharp claws, and an insatiable appetite. As the descendants of Proconsul explored the Earth in entirely new ways, would this lead them into an even more dangerous world? Beneath the broad skies of mainland Australia, a curious creature once roamed free. The greater bilby. With its long, rabbit-like ears and velvety fur, this nocturnal marsupial looked a little like a mouse, a little like a rabbit. It was once a cornerstone of the arid landscape, an ecological engineer whose burrowing and foraging shaped the earth in subtle but profound ways. For thousands of years, the bilby was an industrious and silent contributor to the outback's fragile balance. But today, the bilby is almost a distant memory. Just 10,000 of these animals now exist in the wild. Once greater bilbies called 70% of Australia home, now they are confined to just 20 to 30% of their former habitat and are on the endangered list. The culprit? A series of uninvited guests. Red foxes and feral cats, introduced by settlers in the 19th century. As foxes and cats swept through the outback, the ecosystem lost one of its most critical players, for their absence left soils compacted, seed dispersal disrupted, and an ancient rhythm broken. For billions of years, predators and prey across the globe have been locked in an ever-changing battle of evolutionary change, each adapting to challenge the other's traits. And this was no less true of our own ancestors, for as long as we have walked the earth, we have been at risk of gruesome death by claw, beak, or tooth. But predation also helped shape the survivors, too, in profound ways. The Tugan Hills in modern-day Kenya looked very different 7 million years ago. Then, it was a mosaic of dense forest patches interspersed with open savanna. Climate shifts had reconfigured the region, pulling lush jungles into retreat and leaving behind landscapes that demanded adaptation by past forest dwellers. For Ororintuganensis, an early hominin, these changes would prove transformative. Indeed, a big step had recently been taken in our evolutionary history, Our ancestors were walking on two legs for at least part of the time. A hominin at home, both in the trees and on the ground, or in like they had a diet that utilized both contexts, fruits, foliage, and possibly insects. Indeed, we know from studying its small teeth with their thick enamel that they had the ability to process hard foods like nuts, and maybe chew on bones of smaller mammals and birds. This move out of the trees into the more open space was a response to the changed nature of its environment. It now needed to navigate open grassland in search of food and water. This provided new opportunities for foraging, but also made it vulnerable. Wide open space means few places to hide. Indeed, rather than finding food as they ventured out onto the plains, our ancestors were at risk of becoming it. And so, was it worth the risk? How dangerous truly was it for our distant ancestors at this time? Five to 8 million years ago was a period that marked the emergence of other candidates for our ancestors alongside Orrorin, like Sahelanthropus tridensis, semi-bipedal hominins who were exploring new, flatter, more open environments. This was a time when our ancestors relied on being on constant alert, wary of every movement, every flicker of leaves, every slight sound. Was that noise a footstep? The breath of a giant beast, the opening of jaws? From water to land to air, danger surrounded them. Among the creatures our ancestors would have hoped to avoid were crocodilians, crocodile and alligator ancestors who ruled the rivers and lakes. These were ambush predators, which had remained largely unchanged since the late Cretaceous. Indeed, crocodilians of this time likely resembled their modern counterparts, with powerful jaws capable of delivering bone-crushing bites and a stealthy approach that made them masters of the quiet attack. And they could be huge. Crocodilus thorbjörnssoni once lived in lakes near present-day Lake Turkana in Kenya between about 2 and 4 million years ago. This terrifying beast could grow to 7.5 meters long, 1.5 times the length of a modern Nile crocodile. We can't say for sure that this creature ate our ancestors, but it's possible as they occupied the same territory. Partly submerged in the lake, eyes just above the waterline, these muscular, swift creatures could act in seconds, snapping down on a leg and dragging a poor and unsuspecting hominin down into the deep to drown and be consumed in the depths. These giant crocs don't appear to have left an abundance of evidence of kills from the time of the first hominins, with specific fossil evidence difficult to find. But ominous evidence has been found from just less than 2 million years ago. Hominin remains with crocodilian bite marks have been discovered near ancient water sources in Africa, suggesting these predators were a persistent threat. The fossilized remains of two ancient hominins, unearthed in Tanzania's Olduvai Gorge, reveal a left foot and a left leg, bearing the unmistakable marks of ancient crocodile teeth. While the crocodile's jaws left their trace, having bitten down and torn the leg apart, the shattered ends of the tibia and fibula suggest another predator, perhaps a leopard, feasted on the remains. And so whether crocodiles ambushed these individuals or scavenged their remains, the evidence points to a constant threat of predation. Nearby, at the same archaeological site, stone tools have been found scattered, leading some to suggest the disorganized nature of the tool placement as a sign of abandonment. Lingering too long in a place like Olduvai Gorge might have proved deadly. But it was not just the water our ancestors needed to keep a close eye on. They also needed to watch the skies. In 1924, the fossilized skull of a young Australopithecus africanus, dubbed the Tongue Child, was unearthed in Tongue, South Africa. And this child, estimated to have been about 3 years old, tells a grim story of death from above. We can picture the Tongue Child wandering along beside their family, perhaps stumbling a little on the rocky ground, no one noticing that overhead, an eagle is soaring. In a sudden dive, the bird's shadow would sweep across the ground. Before the child or its family can react, talons would grip its fragile body with great force, the predator lifting it swiftly into the sky. By the end, all that will remain will be bones, and grimly, puncture wounds in the eye sockets of a skull that will be found millennia later. Indeed, these puncture marks in the eye sockets of the tongue child align with talon marks inflicted by modern birds of prey on animals. And so, though we might not think of birds being much of a threat, our ancestors, or at least their infants, would have had much to fear from the skies. And then, there are the teeth and claws of the carnivores that populated the land itself. In 1949, in the arid expanse of Swartkrans, South Africa, paleoanthropologists Robert Broom and J.T. Robinson unearthed the partial cranium of a juvenile Australopithecus robustus, dating back almost 2 million years. This hominin species was smaller than Homo sapiens, but bigger than other primates. And the skull they found bore two puncture wounds on its top, 6mm depressions that sparked a fierce scientific debate. Early interpretations of these marks posited that the wounds came from a weapon wielded in a violent encounter, and supported the idea that our ancestors were bloodthirsty fighters, using tools to kill other hominins. But in the 1970s, paleoanthropologist C.K. Brain questioned this narrative. Revisiting Swartkrans, Brain found a new suspect. Not a rival hominin, but a predator. He proposed that the skull's injuries matched the killing style of a leopard. Indeed, the spacing between the cat's canines, 33mm, aligned perfectly with the holes in the skull. The juvenile Australopithecus was likely dragged into a tree by its feline assailant, the puncture wounds a symbol of its final moments as prey. Leopards, then, may have been our enemies for millions of years. Even today, leopards regularly kill and eat some of our ape cousins, bonobos and chimps. Even humans are not spared, though rare, leopards still kill us. In 2024, 9 people in India were killed. And of course, they are not the only big cats, and certainly not the only large carnivores to have preyed on us over the years. Alongside saber-toothed cats, our ancestors had to cope with giant hyenas, Pachycrocuta, which were about the size of a lion and lived between 3.5 million years ago. And though older fossils are scarce, we can make assumptions based on more recent evidence. At the Jokodian site near Beijing, hyena remains, including bones and fossilized dung, were found alongside Homo erectus fossils, indicating that the cave was used alternately by hyenas and humans over thousands of years. Gnaw marks on some Homo erectus bones, along with a damage pattern consistent with hyena bites, suggest that hyenas scavenged human carcasses, or even preyed on vulnerable individuals, like the ill, old, and young. And so, expanding into more open landscapes clearly ushered in a dangerous period for our ancestors. But the pressures exerted by these predators likely spurred several crucial adaptations. Even bipedalism may have arisen partially as a response to the need for greater vigilance and mobility in the tall savanna grasses, while community cooperation may have become increasingly beneficial as individuals could warn each other of danger or band together to deter predators. These adaptations laid the foundations for the advanced survival strategies of later hominins. Faced with a plethora of predators, from crocodilians and raptors to big cats and snakes, early hominins developed traits that would prove essential for survival. But it came at a cost. And so, the move away from arboreal life introduced many new perils to our ancestors' lives, ushering in a long era of danger, but one that hominins ultimately thrived in. So would this be a sign of things to come? Would the descendants of the hunted, now hunters themselves, live danger-free as masters of their environment? Or was the greatest danger yet on its way? Pingalap, a tiny atoll in the Pacific Ocean, is known as the Island of the Colorblind. Complete achromatopsia, an extreme form of colorblindness causing humans to see in only black, white, and gray, is incredibly rare, affecting around 1 in every 33,000 people in the United States. On Pingalap, however, the condition is known as maskun, or not see in Pingalapese, and it affects almost 10% of the population, with another 30% being unaffected carriers. Why? The origins of this phenomenon trace back to a natural disaster in the late 18th century, when a catastrophic typhoon devastated the island. The storm killed the majority of the population, leaving only around 20 survivors, just one of whom had complete achromatopsia. And yet, after as little as 6 generations, the rare condition affected nearly 5% of Pingalap's population, as the typhoon had caused what scientists refer to as a genetic bottleneck, where the genetic diversity of a population is significantly reduced due to a sharp decline in numbers. It's easy to see how such events can be caused in smaller, isolated populations such as remote Micronesian atolls. But when we look deep into our evolutionary past, we can also find evidence of a much larger event endangering the entire future of our species. Around 1.9 million years ago, Homo erectus emerged as one of the most resourceful and advanced hominins of its time. Taller and with a more modern skeletal structure than its predecessors, Homo erectus was built for endurance. With a brain larger than early hominins, this species marked a clear turning point in our evolution. For the first time, there was a pre-human ancestor who could create complex tools, not just for cutting up meat, but for hunting and foraging. They harnessed fire, not only to cook food, but also to ward off predators and survive cool nights. Evidence from sites like Jokodian in China and Kubu Fora in Kenya even reveal that Homo erectus likely lived in organized social groups, perhaps dividing labor and sharing resources. Fossil evidence from Dmanisi, Georgia, shows multiple individuals of Homo erectus coexisting, but with variations in size and health. One specimen even displays advanced tooth loss and resorption of the jaw, indicating a prolonged period of living without the ability to chew food, relying instead on the support of others. These findings paint Homo erectus as a species well equipped for survival, which proved to be the case given their longevity and geographic dispersal over most of the world, and during that time gave rise to at least 4 species: Homo naledi, Homo floresiensis, Homo luzonensis, and also the lineage that would later contain Denisovans, Neanderthals, and us. Indeed, Homo erectus survived the planet's dangers for nearly 2 million years. The last known site of Homo erectus before their extinction is Ngan Dong, located along the Solo River on the island of Java, Indonesia. Fossil evidence from this site suggested that they persisted there until approximately 110,000 years ago. Perhaps then, the most dangerous time to be a Homo erectus was just over 100,000 years ago, as the last of their kind were trapped in an environment that dramatically changed. Like the Miocene before, the Pleistocene was generally an epoch of drying climate conditions. For a long time, Homo erectus had flourished in the grassland and woodland savannas, but by approximately 110,000 years ago had been confined to much smaller pockets of the planet, sidelined by the emergence of other human species. And a recent study has shown that here, these masters of the drying earth were made extinct by the wet. The last discovered evidence of Homo erectus is in central Java around 100,000 years ago, and a 2019 study found that the environment in this area changed, from an open woodland similar to the regions of Africa erectus had evolved in, to a much wetter biome. Rivers diverted, flood conditions increased, and the open woodland transformed into a rainforest. Fossils of the animals Homo erectus subsisted on disappear from the record, along with the fossils of our human cousins. But crucially, the eventual demise of Homo erectus in the growing rainforests did not alter the journey of our lineage. For the last of the Homo erectus were not ancestors of Homo sapiens, their fate was detached from our own. However, this had not always been the case, for if you travel backwards far enough, then genetic cousin becomes great-great-grandfather. Close to a million years ago, your ancestor was a Homo erectus, and at this time, a great danger arose, one that very nearly drove them to a much earlier extinction, along with us. The first place we can see the magnitude of this danger is in the fossil record. From 1.8 million until around 900,000 years ago, Homo erectus is very well represented by the fossils it left behind. But following this, we see a sharp decline in specimens for the next quarter of a million years, with next to no trace of the previously abundant species in either Africa or Eurasia until around 650,000 years ago. And so over that period, it very much looks as if a near extinction had taken place, only for substantial fossil evidence to resume afterwards. An astounding near miss. A population bottleneck. Population or genetic bottlenecks are sharp reductions in population sizes that can also reduce the total number of genetic characteristics within that population. Humans themselves have caused some of these bottlenecks across the globe. European bison were hunted to extinction in the wild, and all animals living today are descended from just 12 individuals. The introduction of cats and rats to New Zealand's Chatham Islands caused such devastation to the black robin population that all birds still alive are descended from a single female. The bottleneck that nearly ended Homo erectus has been referred to specifically as a super bottleneck. But why, and what exactly, caused it? When we place the gap in the fossil record alongside the corresponding period of Earth's history, we can see that it falls within an event known as the mid-Pleistocene transition. During this time, slowing ocean water cycles reduced the warm water flow up to the North Atlantic, and at the same time, erosion revealed large amounts of rough bedrock in the Northern Hemisphere. These factors led to heavy glaciation, creating a period of extreme cooling. Temperatures would have dropped in Africa, but the Homo erectus populations weren't trudging through snowstorms or venturing across glaciers. So what exactly was it that nearly wiped them out? Many scientists believe that the answer is something that might not immediately come to mind when we think of an ice age. Drought. Increased glaciation locks water from the ocean into ice, causing lower sea levels, which in turn has a knock-on effect on moisture levels and monsoon systems in Africa. This may have exposed Homo erectus populations to mega-droughts, a theory that is supported by many African species disappearing from the fossil record at that time. And so this time of extreme danger for our ancestors may have been marked by both thirst and hunger, as the animals they had come to rely on for food became extinct. It's difficult to accurately model the climate changes during this period, and therefore the effect on our ancestors. But surprisingly, we may now have a fairly precise idea of just how bad this was for the Homo erectus population, and just how close they came to becoming extinct. And this new clue is within us. A 2021 study, later published in Science in 2023, analyzed the genomes of 3,154 present-day humans using a method known as FITCOL, or Fast Infinitesimal Time Coalescent Process, based on something called coalescent theory. Coalescent theory is a method that can estimate historical population sizes by analyzing how genetic lineages trace back to a common ancestor over time. In a larger population, it will take longer for genetic lineages to merge or coalesce due to the volume of people. In smaller populations, genetic lineages merge more quickly because fewer individuals means a higher chance that two lineages share an ancestor. And using this, scientists can estimate the population sizes of our ancient ancestors. And this new study, conducted by East China Normal University's Dr. Yixuan Pan and colleagues, shows that we came remarkably close to extinction during the mid-Pleistocene transition, precisely when Homo erectus fossils disappear from the fossil record. The study estimates our ancestors' population at around 100,000 individuals shortly before 900,000 years ago, then plummeting 98.7%. This threadbare population of around 1,000 individuals struggling along at this level for approximately 117,000 years. Professor Chris Stringer said, "It's an extraordinary length of time. It's remarkable that we did get through it at all. For a population of that size, you just need one bad climate event, an epidemic, a volcanic eruption, and you're gone." But yet again, we survived, and yet again, this was a brush with death that left its mark permanently on our species. For the Pleistocene super bottleneck was not only one of the most dangerous times our lineage faced, but may also have had a significant hand in shaping our future. Indeed, the study itself postulates that it may have been from this dramatically reduced Homo erectus population that Homo heidelbergensis, the possible ancestral species of modern humans, arose. But what about the descendants of this super bottleneck? Does their re-emergence in the fossil record indicate a time of plenty to come? 500,000 years until the birth of our species, and another 300,000 years until now, was it a period of comfort that allowed Homo sapiens to make advances hitherto unseen on the planet? Or did the trials continue? The mid-Pleistocene transition may have nearly ended us before we began, but a much more extreme Earth was in store for humanity. Around 700 million years ago, the Earth entered a frozen purgatory. A time now called Snowball Earth, this was no brief ice age. Ice sheets thousands of feet thick blanketed the entire planet. Winds whipped across barren, reflective surfaces stretching across the globe. It was a planetary freeze that would last nearly 100 million years, the world almost entirely entombed in ice, from the poles to the equator. We don't know for sure what triggered it, but theories suggest a cascade of feedback loops, diminishing atmospheric carbon dioxide and expanding polar ice, leading to runaway cooling. Then, as the glaciers crept towards the equator, Earth's reflectivity increased, preventing any warming, a reverse of our greenhouse effect today. The Earth was effectively locked in a frozen stranglehold. Of course, this would have not been an easy time to be alive. Nevertheless, as it always has done, life found a way. Beneath the frozen surface, life, such as it was, endured against impossible odds, surviving in scattered refugia, such as hydrothermal vents, patches of open water, or beneath thin layers of ice, the resilience of these primitive organisms laying the foundation for future evolution. And this life would, hundreds of millions of years later, now evolved into Homo sapiens, face the cold again. Not a snowball Earth this time, but an ice age, reaching its peak roughly 25,000 years ago, that would transform their home into a barren, snowy land, and threaten their survival once again. And so what would it have been like to live in this frozen world? With no respite from the harsh cold, was this finally the biggest challenge to human survival? Having endured so many prior threats, having acquired adaptations along the way, were these frigid years in fact the biggest test, the most dangerous time to be alive? We only have to look at the way the population changed to understand the impact this inhospitable climate had. Using computer modeling of populations and climate, scientists have estimated that during the last glacial maximum, the population of humans in Europe dropped by over half, from around 330,000 people 30,000 years ago to around 130,000 people by 23,000 years ago. Yet despite the clear dangers of this time and the huge loss of life, it was again a period that forged the skills and traits that set our species apart. Indeed, our ancestors didn't just endure, they innovated, survived, and thrived. By the time the last ice age descended, modern humans, Homo sapiens, had arrived. Our direct ancestors shared this frozen world with the very last of the Neanderthals, their stocky cousins who thrived in the colder regions, but Neanderthal populations were declining. In a sense, the world was ours for the taking, but it was a hostile one. Archaeological evidence from Mezhirikh, Ukraine, tells us a little about how our ancestors survived these terrible conditions. Here, mammoth bones, unearthed from the 15,000-year-old site, reveal that they were used not just for food, but as structural material for shelters. In a treeless, barren tundra, mammoth rib cages and skulls became walls, probably with hides stretched across them to create insulation. Though not the earliest evidence of humans building structures, these bones are among the most well-documented examples of very early, complex, purpose-built shelters. Perhaps families huddled inside these shelters beneath mountains of furs, relying on the heat of a smoky fire and each other's bodies to keep them warm through the night. With limited foraging of fruits and nuts possible in the wasted landscape, meat would have been a key source of nutrition. Cave paintings at Lascaux and Chauvet in France provide further insights into how these humans managed to obtain their much-needed meals. Dated to the Upper Paleolithic period, approximately 30 to 15,000 years ago, these works of art, preserved in limestone caves, depict a world populated by both prey and predators that roamed the Ice Age landscapes alongside humans. The paintings at Lascaux show detailed images of horses, aurochs, and deer, which were central to human survival as sources of food, clothing, and tools. In contrast, the older paintings at Chauvet Cave, almost 30,000 years old, focus on predators, such as lions, cave bears, and woolly rhinoceroses. Perhaps these were retellings of great escapes, or a lesson or warning to younger tribe members of what to avoid. Or maybe these drawings represent a spiritual or symbolic reverence for the creatures that could prolong life through hunting and the creatures that could so easily take life away. Beyond mere survival, these paintings reflect a profound appreciation for the natural world and a desire to communicate stories, knowledge, and beliefs. They demonstrate a keen awareness of the dangers of the icy world and the deep necessity for successful hunting. In them, then, is a duality. They tell us the history of survival strategies while hinting at the fears of a world where everything was hungry and humans were not alone at the top of the food chain. In the Czech Republic, at the site of Dolní Vesternice, an extraordinary accumulation of mammoth bones has been unearthed. Some arranged in apparently intentional patterns. Here, believe archaeologists, are signs of hunting strategy. To bring down a woolly mammoth, similar in size to an African elephant but much stockier and heavier at around 4 to 6 tons, would be no easy feat, certainly beyond one person's ability, so a hunt for multiple mammoths would have required cooperation and foresight. Groups would have had to locate herds, position hunters, and coordinate their attacks using spears and traps. After the hunt, butchery sites show evidence of skilled disassembly and probable resource distribution. We can't know for sure who got the choicest pieces of meat, perhaps the hunters as a reward, or perhaps the vulnerable, like pregnant women or the elders. But we can imagine that these hunts provided more than just food. They were a training ground for teamwork and the sharing of knowledge. And this ability to cooperate would come to underpin the very structure of civilization itself. But the cold wasn't the only danger during the Ice Age. At the archaeological site of Nataruk in Kenya, a grim picture emerges. Here, skeletons dated to roughly 10,000 years ago show evidence of violent deaths. Skulls crushed by blunt objects, bones pierced by sharpened projectiles. Though not in the heart of the coldest parts of the Ice Age, Nataruk can tell us about behaviours in a world of scarcity. The remains of at least 27 individuals, including men, women, and children, show signs of violent death, including fractured skulls, stab wounds, and embedded stone projectiles. Indeed, these remains suggest that during this era, the battle for survival was fought as much against their own kind as against the environment. Throughout our history, we have endured and perpetuated violence against our own kind. It comes in waves and is tied to scarcity and instability. The last ice age was just such a time, and it's not hard to imagine how quickly a tribe could set upon another if their hunting grounds or areas of foraging or even their shelters appeared superior. This was a time to close ranks, to foster relationships within the tribe, but to have little sentimentality about those beyond it. Over tens of millions of years, our ancestors have endured many threats, from great geological upheavals, to mass extinctions, to cunning predators. Every one of our ancestors that survived long enough to pass on their DNA to the next contributed to the humans we have become today. Our evolutionary journey is a messy one, full of death and fear, violence and starvation, but through it all, we adapted and persisted. Our ancestors learned to stand, learned to think, learned to work together, to hunt strategically, to build, to manufacture. We have been molded by many millennia of experiences, our form chiseled by hardship. And so it would be easy to conclude that we have reached the end of that journey, that human ingenuity and invention today, our advanced technologies, our lightning speed methods of communication, means that we can counter any new danger. But we need only look back at our history to see that such a belief would be misguided. We don't truly know what we will have to survive next as a species, but we can only hope it will make us stronger. You've been watching the entire history of humankind. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.